Hello, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me, Chris Denson. You're gracious. My lip just hit the microphone. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, good, because, you know, my big lips. In case you guys are tuning in for the first time to Innovation Crush, this show covers all things innovation, ideas, smart people doing smart things, and today the buck does not stop. Hi, Mara Abrams.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
I'm in good spirits today.
Excellent.
So, for the people who may not know, who are you?
Who am I?
Yes. How would you define Amara Abrams?
Well, I would define myself as somebody working at the intersection of social impact and innovation, and really trying to look at how you do that at scale. So how do you work with partners to make sure that whatever that thing that you're building is actually really impactful in the biggest way possible? So at the moment, I am actually working with the federal government. I'm the founder and co-director of the Census Open Innovation Labs, which is a team that we stood up a couple of years ago within the U.S. Census Bureau to solve some of the biggest challenges facing the public via the Census Bureau. And we're using a lot of the strategies that I learned in the private sector and elsewhere in the nonprofit and philanthropy space to really scale those innovations across the U.S. So we have a mandate to reach, you know, around 340 million people. So I've learned that small tasks. And I've learned that public service is actually a really amazing way to reach that kind of scale.
Or a Logan Paul video.
Well, I'll leave that to you.
That's a pretty lofty goal. And you said this team is 2 years old?
Yes.
How close to the 340 million are you so far? Like, what's that take in terms of thinking broadly enough and literally this is the most inclusive thing I can think of.
Where do you start? You start to understand the needs of the different communities that need to be counted, and you start by working with the stakeholders who have already been working with them for decades, have been through many decennial censuses. Our next one is coming up in 2020. So we have to kind of start with, okay, how do we actually put a 21st century lens on the way that things have always been done? How do you reach them in this new media landscape that looks nothing like it did in 2010 when we did our last census, or in 2000? In 2010, the iPhone was 3 years old, which is pretty insane.
That's crazy.
It's pretty insane if you think about it.
You gave a really great TEDx talk about this about your entire role, but specifically that was one of the things that wowed me, is just how much the world has changed in 10 years, from social media to Snapchat to just how fast information travels, a thing on a social media. Are those platforms and things that you'll employ? Will it be more digitally collected, or, you know, are we still going door knocking, or are we doing a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. Hopefully less door knocking and more digital. So 2020 will be the first online census, or online first census, I should say. There will still be, paper and phone options. But the idea is we want as many people to self-respond as possible. And there's a window next spring in which you can do that. If you don't actually self-respond, then everyone will get a paper form. And then after that, if you still aren't responding, then the door knockers come. Those are called enumerators, and they will go to every household in the U.S.
That is that's a lot of shoes.
It's a lot of shoes. It's a lot of people we have to hire, hundreds of thousands of people. So it's actually the largest staff up in the United States, aside from the military and wartime.
Yeah, I was just 900 employees plus, right? And even just statistics like 75 million address changes have been tracked. Just the massiveness of this. How much does your innovation work touch on the door knocking aspect of it versus engagement and awareness?
It's more on engagement and awareness.
Yeah.
And we're the Open Innovation Lab. So that means that we're not necessarily changing any of the existing structures or tactics. We are working to partner with outside organizations and networks to solve some of these big challenges. We may put out, you know, some kind of challenge where other companies or networks are actually working on, you know, solving the hiring challenge.
Yeah.
So it's more like open innovation includes things like prize competitions, like ideation sessions.
Oh, it's not like a dance challenge.
It could be a dance challenge.
It could be a dance challenge.
Maybe a census dance would be the thing to do.
Dancing with the census.
Dancing with the...
Oh. I'm just saying.
Wow.
I could do this all day.
I will
you might leave.
To that task.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
But it's a great list. Please, I guess, who are some of those partners that you're reaching out to, or that, you know, or people also reaching out to you?
It ranges. I mean, anyone you could think of could actually be considered a partner. But what the approach that my team is taking is actually bringing unconventional partners together. So we may have a county commissioner alongside Rock the Vote, alongside a national advocacy organization like the Leadership Conference, which is an umbrella organization to several hundred civil rights organizations. We work with them very closely. But then we may bring in like a creative network, like, you know, some kind of creative alliance or something like that, and bring them kind of all in a room together, all on one specific challenge, so that you're tackling that challenge from many different angles. And when I say challenge, usually for us, it means looking at a particular group that we call hard to count. There's a long list of those groups. They tend to be people who are typically marginalized in our society. So it's low-income people, renters, people of color, immigrants, but kids under five also are severely undercounted, you know, rural populations, et cetera, et cetera. So there's this long list of people who are hard to count for different reasons. Yeah. And we're kind of like building these little collectives to help solve the challenge of like, how do you actually reach those people most effectively?
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the consequence, because you eloquently stated this before. One of the stats I heard you say, 2 million children were uncounted.
Not counted in the 2010 census.
And even in LA County alone, it led to a $500 million annual loss of funding. I guess with the, because a big part of that is trust. It's one of the biggest words I wrote on my notes. But how do you go about gaining trust from those individuals and instilling that through innovation?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's all about working through what we call the trusted voices. You know, we are running a massive advertising campaign starting next January, like we as in the Census Bureau. And that will be the official Census Bureau kind of led campaign. It's based on years of, you know, research and message testing. So, you know, there's going to be that. But, you know, our team's position is that we need to actually supplement that with you know, helping the community voices, the trusted voices, you know, whether it's a church leader or, you know, a brand like McDonald's or something, we need to equip them with the tools to help them do their own outreach. So it's not just coming from the government, because trust of the government right now is at an all-time low. And so we know that like government-led messaging won't be enough. We really have to make sure that community members and the people who are already on the ground doing Get Out the Count efforts, which we call them, because it's such a parallel between that and Get Out the Vote, in terms of operations and how you reach people. But really getting those people on the ground who are already working on those efforts, get them the resources that they need. So basically, we're sort of serving as a matchmaker between the creative communities and the people who are already executing those types of efforts.
It's interesting that you mentioned traditional advertising in that sense, but also coupling it with these other moments that you want to create. What have you looked into, like, the change or the shift in consumer psychology over the, let's say, 10 years ago? Our attention spans were a little bit probably, you know, longer, and a message could stick.
Yeah.
Here it's like, whatever headline is the headline of the day goes away tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a large piece of our advertising budget is focused on digital, which is a pretty new thing, or we're focusing more on digital than ever. But of course, it has to, you know, incorporate those kind of consumer behaviors or, you know, and that's kind of why we kind of work with the members of different communities to see what messages are sticking, what aren't, and then the formats. And of course, we're going to be looking at all the analytics and stuff like that to make sure that we can tweak those messages and make sure they're hitting as many eyeballs as possible.
On the other side of trust, I think the rumor has it, or at least the popular belief is that there are also entities who want to abuse the count in some way. Mm-hmm. Is there an effort in place to combat that? Or is it just more about like engaging the people to, I'll say, take the risk, quote unquote, to be counted despite any opposition?
Yeah, of course, we're definitely kind of looking at that from all angles, offense and defense. And the thing is that, you know, people have always wanted to manipulate the census. You know, people who don't want certain groups to be counted for various reasons. And the difference is that that used to be kind of like poster campaigns, or like, you know, they'd put up misinformation in a storefront or something like that. Whereas now the tactics have completely changed. And so, of course, there's going to be people trying to manipulate it, whether that's through the spread of disinformation or whether that's through direct attacks. But of course, we are kind of doing everything we can on both the offense and defense side to prevent that.
This is the game time.
Game time. Yeah, we just hit the 1 year out mark.
Yeah, how's it feel? Crazy. How do you actually feel right now?
It feels I've been at this for like 2.5 years, and it feels like we've had like all these great discussions and we're building partnerships, and then suddenly like the year happened. It was like, okay, like no, this is like actually happening. Like we're actually doing this.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's an awesome catalyst because we don't have time to waste. So the clock is truly ticking, and it's like whatever you do, you know, it has to work. And that's kind of been the biggest difference between this and like some of the other work that I've done, like in the foundation world, for example, whereas like we obviously, you know, if you're like, when I was at the Nike Foundation, we were helping to solve global poverty. And so of course you want to do that as quickly as possible. Yeah. But this is the first time I've had like
there's a
real time constraint. And I think that's actually a really good thing because it's a catalyst for us to be like, all right, it's now or never to do these things that work.
And you're also like, you're a first ever, right? This is the first ever lab inside the census, first ever innovation effort.
Yeah. I mean, there's been like kind of an internal innovation lab, but we're the first ones who are all about open innovation. So like, you know, looking at how you can solve problems for the public using federal open data, for example, is like a big one of our projects. So it's really all about partnering with the outside. And it's like basically recognizing that, and this goes for any institution, any organization, but you have to recognize your own limits. And by kind of crowdsourcing, like tapping into the wisdom of the crowd, you can say, you know what, we may have the best and brightest statisticians in the world, but maybe we don't have the best and brightest creators or, you know, influencers in the world. Or Chris Denson. Unless I try to hire you, which I got
a couple extra days.
Okay. I'm sure you would love being a Fed.
So that kind of led me to this idea of the third pillar of trust, which sounds like a book title, but which I think is you in this regard, right? Mm. Why did you get this phone call, and why did they believe in you to be the person to lead this effort?
Yeah, I think I like was kind of a generalist who carved out a really niche space, if that makes sense. I kind of worked across a lot of different issue areas, ranging from education to helping girls out of poverty to empowering journalists in conflict and post-conflict regions. But there was kind of like this thread of that where I was kind of taking really different approaches and bringing in collectives of people who just approach problems in really different ways to tackle these challenges, and working in a really agile way and bringing some like entrepreneurial type of and like design thinking to these age-old problems. I think I kind of built a reputation for that. And so, you know, someone I knew who was a presidential innovation fellow kind of knew about my work and gave me a call and said, how would you like to do that for the government? And I, you know, it was a time when I was going through a transition and I said, you know, why not? This sounds like a pretty amazing opportunity.
That's cool. No, because did it at any point feel daunting once you realized what the gravity is, or did you have enough practice in sort of this space to go like, all right.
I had no idea what I was in for. Nothing could have really prepared me. In fact, you know, I kind of came in thinking I was going to run an accelerator. I know that's like very trendy to do, but I thought it would be like, you know, really cool to start one of the first, you know, startup accelerators within the federal government and, you know, working with startups who are using like census data, for example. Yeah. You know, and it evolved into this much bigger thing that is actually still a big part of our work. But it evolved into this, like I just actually personally didn't even understand the gravity of the decennial census. And once I understood that, I was like, okay, whoa, this is like one of the most important things I could possibly be doing.
You're like, excuse me. And you went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And threw up.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. Just one second. Exactly. So go ahead.
Well, actually I'm just realizing now that I don't think I even like covered why the decennial census is so important. I know you mentioned kind of billions of dollars.
We got time, go for it.
Back into the community, but it's also kind of how we divvy up money and power, and it's also data that determines so many facets of our lives. So apportionment is the number of congressional seats each state will gain or lose. It's redistricting on a congressional and then more legislative local levels. And of course, it's how federal funding comes into states. We have one chance to get it right every 10 years. We've been doing it since 1790. We used to do it by horse. it's written into the Constitution, constitutionally mandated to count every single person living in the United States. And so, as you mentioned, you know, if certain populations aren't counted, they don't get their fair share of you know, political representation and funding for things like schools, healthcare, SNAP programs, like all types of assistance, roads. I mean, it's all of the infrastructure that runs our lives. And so, you know, how do you know to build a school down the road if like no one's counted out there? Mm. If you're going to think there's no population there or an undercounted population, you're not going to, you know, build those programs or those, you know, critical pieces of our lives. So it is one of the most fundamental pillars of US democracy, but not enough people know this. I didn't even know it.
No, it sounds like the most important one. Like,
yes. And that's why I've just been on this mission where it's really funny. I work remotely from LA. And so I'm like often at these places where you would not expect, you know, a federal employee to be talking about this.
Like
census.
Flash a badge at a
flash my badge
at the Standard Hotel. Yeah.
But I've now like kind of built this reputation as like, oh, you're the census girl, because I just won't shut up about it, because it is this thing that we have to pay attention to. We have to. It's just so, it's, you know, I think my opinion is it's as important as voting. But the thing is, like, no one knows it. So
based on what you've said, I would almost go, it's not to disencourage voting, but it's almost more important than voting, because there's so many things that happen just based on the math.
Exactly.
So, that's the cause and effect. That one, if I wrote down a little diagram, I'll explain it to you later. But, I thought about your entry point coming to this, right? You know, like, oh, I did some stuff at Nike, and but then what we just talked about, how the gravity of all this, there's also the ambiguity, right? Going into a situation where you kind of get it, you know enough, but you don't know everything. Just walk us through how to operate in ambiguity, like whether it's at the Census Bureau or somewhere else. You know, I'm sure you've walked in a few rooms where you're like, oh, I thought we were okay. Well, here we go.
Yeah, I think it's really about taking on that beginner's mindset wherever you go and not trying to be the smartest person in the room, but trying to, you know, talk to people who know what they're talking about. And even though I know that I have a really different lens on things, like given that I have a lot of expertise in innovation and future thinking and that sort of thing, but also to like check myself and be, you know,
before,
like,
you wrecked yourself.
Yeah, I know, I was about to finish that, but I knew you would do it for me.
I saw you wanted it to come out. I know, and I was like, I'll volley this one or serve it.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's a big part of it, is like kind of listening and learning. But at a certain point, you know, you have to get out of your own analysis paralysis and just start doing stuff. And so we're sort of like this experimental arm where we start like little, you know, prototypes of things. If we have an idea to do, you know, 20 events across the country and it's going to solve this problem, you know, start with like one really tiny event with like 10 people. And so it's, I think, and then you're going to learn. And even if, you know, part of that, you know, isn't as successful as you wanted it to be, what you can do is look at it and say, you know what, these are the parts that are not working. This is what is, and here's how we can move forward.
In this case, what has the organization's response been, or maybe not response, but just reaction to dipping your toe in the water, right? These are like smaller experiments just to see if we get there, especially when you're up against a very hard deadline.
You know,
I think that happens in a lot of businesses where like, we got to have this. And you're like, we don't have time to experiment.
I think I think we're up against a hard deadline. We're also up against kind of a different mindset around how to approach things. And I think that's okay. I mean, I think for good reason, the government has built kind of, it's very methodical and there's a lot of policies and procedures. And sometimes we clash with those, but I think what's most important is that we do have a lot of support from our leadership to have this little sandbox. And so we play in that sandbox. And I think it's really about, you know, for the people who might not completely understand the way that we work, it's about kind of speaking to them in a language that they understand and not using like crazy buzzwords. I know we've made that mistake too many times before, but, you know, just kind of and making sure that it's really kind of helping them to reach their goals. Because if it looks like that, like we're chasing bright, shiny objects and just doing all the cool stuff, like no one's really going to get on board with that. But if we say like, hey, this
Steve Aoki.
Yeah. And if we say Steve Aoki is actually going to help you do your job better, then like, hey.
Walk me through this creative hackathon because you're fresh off of that.
You were
in the great Northwest.
Yeah, I was up in Portland, Oregon, doing something that we call Creatives for the Count. And so basically we're matching the needs of nonprofits doing census outreach with creatives. And so we partnered with a number of kind of creative networks and then kind of local.
When you say creative, what is that? Are we talking painters? Are we talking videographers? Are we talking
All poets? All of it. I mean, we kind of consider the general public, you know, we can kind of lump that in there. I mean, what we're really looking for is kind of designers, filmmakers, storytellers, digital strategists. But, you know, there's a lot of people who will show up to these things just saying, hey, I want to help. And we can show them how to use Canva or something, or like make memes, or, you know, like you don't have to be like the most brilliant designer to be able to just make stuff. So we really try to eke creativity out of every single human who takes an interest in this, whether they consider themselves creative or not.
Is there anything like out of that operating system that you're personally excited? I mean, I'm sure you're excited about it all, but is there one thing that like stands out as like, oh, that was a great idea that came out of this that we're actually moving forward?
It's more like the volume of ideas and having a platform to follow through with those ideas. Kind of the initial approach my team was taking was to do these like ideation sessions. We did dozens and dozens of them. They're still actually going on. But I really wanted to take that further beyond the idea stage and like actually start making stuff. Which is why we said, you know what, we can actually have some kind of short format event where people just come together and make stuff. And it's really fun and really engaging. And then if they want to continue building that stuff out, they can do so at like, you know, in a virtual kind of way. So I think it's just like I can't say that there's like one idea that's like, whoa, but it's like the sheer number of people who are solving problems for different populations. Who are doing it across the country. That's the most exciting thing for me. What we're really looking for now is partners who can like help us scale that up, because we're a really small team. We need to find, you know, whatever group it may be who says, you know, I want to take this on. I want to, you know, put this, take on this format in my own school or my own company or whatever it is. We're very excited about that.
Do you ever find that it's a little too open? Because I think when you are a generalist and you kind of present an opportunity as like, it could be whatever. And I'm not taking away anything from what you said, because I go through it almost on a daily basis. It's like, in my head, I know exactly what it is or could be, or how this can net something.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, sometimes it's just like, what do you want from me?
Exactly.
How can I contribute? You tell me. Or Or it just sounds like, oh, cool, you're stirring the pot. That sounds great.
Well, as a matter of fact, we actually have a whole process around this. And so we will develop problem statements and creative briefs. And we like are very specific about that. So we'll basically go to whatever organization we're trying to help and say, like, what is it that you need the most? And some of them will say, like, social media banners. And other people will be like, you know, share graphics. And other people will be like, we need a logo for this We Count Oregon initiative that we're running. And then we'll, so we'll basically say, like, here's what we need, but then here's how different groups respond to different messages. And so if it's the Asian American community, they might respond to messages about family. Or if then we kind of like get into the characteristics of those groups. And so we're giving them like kind of this full creative brief so that they do have some guardrails, because otherwise, you're right, it is too open. And like, I think people get overwhelmed with that. You know, and I think just like being a really good facilitator is I'm learning that this is, it's such an important piece of it, because there was kind of a part of the last event where we said, okay, go off and do stuff. And people were kind of like,
crickets.
Yeah. We're like, okay, we need to actually have better.
I got a shovel.
You're like, yeah, exactly. That's and useless. Like, no, okay. Now you're going to, you know, do this and do that, you know.
So well, it's funny because it's, I think what I find with most innovators is not most people think like innovators, right? And, you know, and I think it's great to have expertise or be a disciplinarian in a certain vertical or, you know, output. But I'm curious as to, what are you good at?
What am I good at?
Because like, you know, what's your superpower? Because it's like, it's not like you're doing accounting or you're a coder or, you know what I mean? No. There's not some.
Definitely not a statistician.
So, you know, like what's that unique Mara Abrams thing that kind of makes this all work?
I think I'm really good at bringing unconventional partners together to do something that they wouldn't have been able to do on their own. And that's manifested in many different ways in my life, whether I was, whether it was as global partnerships manager for the Nike Foundation, whether it's throwing a dinner party, of which you've probably attended a few. And just
that.
Like, yeah. And it's almost like this, this like art and science of curation and like knowing that, hey, no one would have ever thought to bring that like crazy graffiti artist together with that like random organization, but here they are together and they're doing something really magical.
Yeah. Sometimes I refer to that as planned serendipity. I think sometimes you just put the right mix of people in the room and suddenly they end up in a conversation and you've got that graffiti art logo for the state of Oregon. I just made it up, but now it's an idea. What does that feel like when you see it working?
Oh my God. There's probably no better feeling. It's so nice to just like step back and just be like, you know, this shit eating grin on my face. Like, oh my God, I did that. Like, it's really... it's just really gratifying, and it's amazing to be able to have this platform. I think probably no one would suspect that the federal government is doing cool shit, but we are. And I think it's just so amazing to be able to, you know, take a step back and say, oh my God, we're doing so much, and it's really making an impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Define impact in Mara Abrams terms.
Yeah, I think it's
a word. It's a word we hear a lot.
I know.
It's like the word innovation. It becomes like ubiquitous.
Yeah, what does
it's just
it even mean?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. In your case, what does
and
it?
I think like there's always this tension of like, do you want to like deeply impact the lives of 10 people, or you want to like, you know, have some sort of impact on 100,000 people? And I think that's always going to be present, but no matter what, it's all about kind of looking at the problem and not just like creating solutions for a problem that doesn't exist. So saying like, okay, what's really the problem? What's really going on here? And then being able to kind of address that in a way that makes a difference, whether that's, hey, we got like 100,000 more people to respond to the census, or whether that's like, you know, ensuring that girls have access to education. It's about looking at that problem and knowing that, like, you know, again, taking that beginner's mindset and saying like, you know what, I don't know shit about this problem, but I'm going to work with the people who do and figure out like, what is the best way to activate people to help those folks already doing the work, to just be better resourced.
I got to say, you got an A on my test.
Oh, thanks.
Cause you said, I'm passionate about bringing together purpose-driven leaders, organizations, and community members to work together to create new solutions to the world's biggest problems. Mm. That was from your website, MaraAbrams.com. How did you... sometimes it's hard to articulate your personal brand, right? Like, and not you, but just if you kind of play in a lot of different areas and you can bring people together. When did it start coming together for you? Like the Mara Abrams brand story?
Well, yeah, I mean, it all happened very serendipitously where I just kind of kept an open mind and I was constantly curious and I knew that I always wanted to do something, you know, that had meaning in the world. And I think it was just like a series of kind of, you know, like being able to jump into something and say yes to various opportunities. And then I started noticing some patterns in myself. Like, I'm always drawn to sort of future thinking. How can you solve challenges with new technologies or new innovations? And I realized like that was kind of the thread because I did jump around a little bit. You know, again, I was like working on media innovation.
Jump around.
Wow.
Yep.
You just went there.
It's Throwback Thursday. I'm going to publish this episode on a Thursday.
Yeah, wow.
Jump around. Should do something with those guys.
Yeah. They're still relevant, right?
Sorry.
Completely relevant. Continue.
This is a problem when I know people.
I know.
Go ahead.
I know. I mean, but I think like, you know, you could solve really any challenge facing society, but like it's like basically a process of using methods that will work in any environment, whether it's any issue or any like kind of era of time, like just knowing like future-proofing solutions and the ability to kind of be agile and build coalitions and partnerships. I think those are kind of the ingredients and how I operate and how I've kind of positioned myself in the world as like someone who can look at a problem and figure out some strategies to chip away at that.
Do you envision a day where your work will no longer be needed?
Like, I hope so.
I mean, look, Jay-Z said this in an interview recently. Well, not recently, but like last year. But he talked about, I forget which video it was for. Now I'm drawing a blank. But it's basically like he created this world where there were no more first black anythings. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the video presented. It's like we stopped having that conversation. And when I think about social issues or impact-driven, you know, initiatives, the goal is always to eradicate, if not at the very least minimize it.
Absolutely.
But do you have visions of grandeur of like one day I won't need to have a job?
One day I was that.
Because your work will never be done otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, absolutely. I'd be out of a job and meditating on some mountaintop in Bali. That would be the dream. But unfortunately, I don't think we're going to solve all the world's problems in my lifetime. So for now, you know, I'm just going to keep working on it.
Because the reason that led me to such a larger question, because I think about the number of issues I come across on any given day or any of us, you know, you open a Twitter feed, there's going to be like five things you deeply care about. And I just don't have the time, the resources, you know, I got to go to work. Like,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, such and such died of that. But I'm going back to, you know, does that ever pop up? Like, just kind of like the other side of FOMO where you're like, I wish I could, but I can't. And then how do you reconcile that?
Yeah. So like, I wish I could just do something else or.
Well, no, like, because there are so many issues that need addressing.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I feel like sometimes I just feel like overwhelmed. Like, oh, my gosh, like there's. I feel like an asshole.
Yes. Yeah, but I also think it's really important to just double down on whatever that thing you're working on is, because otherwise you're just constantly going to be like, squirrel, there's another side of problem. That's right. What I'm like. But, you know, I think there are endless, endless, endless challenges that we're facing as a society. And I think it's okay to just choose one, you know, even though you know that climate change or something or education or there's all these other issues that I very much care about, but you can only do so much.
Yeah.
And even if that's, you know, I think if someone's out there solving just that problem in the community, they're a doctor or whatever it is that they do, you know, just pick that thing and you don't have to do it all.
By the way, I never know which garbage can to use. So if I walk into, if I go throw something away, there's like four garbage cans. I'm like, compost, then, recycle.
It's so cool when they
garbage.
Use, like these like biodegradable materials.
Yeah, and then I would like, what do I do with
that one? To put the thing
I just eat
in.
It. I just eat those.
Well, they're corn, so I'm sure it's
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Fiber.
Like, it's high fructose corn syrup. So Tanzania, Iraq, Kosovo, you've been all over the world just with other work. And obviously, I think when you do this, another thing you mentioned in your TED Talk was, you know, looking at how people respond to the census in other parts of the world, which I don't even think the layman of us would imagine. Like, oh yeah, I guess they do count people in France. Like, it's just, we're so Americanized. What have you seen in those other territories that maybe you want to apply here, or vice versa? Do you take a census, like after 2020, do you go to another part of the world and help infuse this kind of thinking into counting, or that exchange?
Yeah, I'm not going to work on another country's census. But I've always been curious about kind of building better governance in places outside of the U.S. And so applying some of these tactics that I've found to be effective in the U.S. and seeing how we might be able to do that elsewhere is something I'm definitely interested in. I can't say that I'm an expert on how other countries do a census. I do think it's really interesting that the U.S. is one of the very few that conducts a census that's directly tied to democracy, whereas other countries, you know, almost every other country does a census, but it's more kind of demographics and data, and we certainly do it for that purpose too. But ours is, you know, as you know, it's directly in, it's in the Constitution and tied to our democracy. So that's what I found really interesting about it. But I would love to go out there and learn a little bit more about what other countries do and how they do it.
You've been good at is, you know, going in, like I said, a beginner's mindset. And I think that translates into other disciplines is part of the reason I get myself into trouble. Just because I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, yeah. You know, just we were together last month with this whole GovCity initiative. And I've never, like, I was on a neighborhood council 10 years ago. So it's like, that's the extent of my governmental experience. And I'm like, I'm sitting in a room with folks like you and Homeland Security and NASA and the Air Force. And I'm like, but I know that my naivete has value, right? Yeah. So I think the same thing happens when you show up, I would imagine. I don't want to speak for you, but
yeah. Like, and, well, let me throw it back at you.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. And how did you approach that situation, not being familiar
with
the government?
I cried a lot.
Oh.
Yep. I'm still crying on the inside. No, I think there's an excitement to the wonder and the curiosity of a new domain. Like, you know, a couple of weeks later, I was at WonderCon, right? Like, so and then it's like nerds and geeks and people in costumes and, you know, LARPing and all this stuff. But I love like going into a world and figuring out how it works and then asking the dumb question or bringing the thing that is whatever's endemic to your, you know, your environment. Like, I'm going to go like, oh, let's bring a polar, yeah, whatever. I'm a bad example, but let's bring something that you would have not normally thought to align with this, your unlikely pairings kind of thing. But yeah, I think I just have a genuine curiosity about how things work and how people work and what makes them tick. Mm. What did little Mara Abrams want to be when she grew up?
I don't know if she knew. I think at one point, I don't know. I think I just had to pick something. I was like, dentist.
I did the same thing. I was like, scientist. I just told the story the other day. My mom was so proud of it. Yeah. She was like, he wants to be a scientist. I was like, I don't know.
I respect people in the dentistry field, but that really was not for me. But actually, from a pretty young age, like probably starting in high school, I've had this fascination with mass media and its effect on people. Mm. In fact, even in high school, I like wrote this paper on how, well, I'm dating myself, but how like those teen girl magazines were so detrimental to our like confidence and mental health, and how you had to be like, no one could ever be thin enough or white enough or whatever. And so like, I think like really from an early age, I was like, well, how could you leverage mass media to do something good? And so that's actually really been a thread throughout my career. I started off kind of in journalism, and I realized, well, maybe there's something else I can do, and that kind of transformed into training other people to be journalists in a very rapidly changing journalism environment. You know, they're starting to become much more democratized. So how do you actually train people in the developing world or in low-income areas or in conflict or post-conflict regions to tell their own stories? And now everybody has a phone and everyone can tell their own story. So sort of like looking at that. But I think that's really tied to like something I've always been interested in from a really early age.
All those examples kind of feel to me like, you know, people say, oh, you're ahead of your time. But you're ahead of your time in a way where you can take that thinking and give it to people. You know, sometimes ahead of your time is like, ah, sorry, you missed it. Like, you know, it's insinuating missing a mark, as opposed to being future forward enough that it can be implemented today. Do you think about that at all?
I think about that a lot. And I think about when you asked what my talent or superpower was, I do think I'm really good at bringing people together, but I wouldn't say that I'm like particularly talented or skilled in one thing, except in recognizing other people's talents and skills, and recognizing that if you kind of replicate that, if you like understand sort of the value and creativity and brilliance of every human being on this planet, you can tap into that. And that creates a lot of effect and wisdom at scale. So that's kind of what I'm all about. And hopefully transferring some of that future thinking and knowledge onto other people as well.
Here's a bad segue. Speaking of future, you almost didn't have one.
Huh? Oh my God. Huh? Yeah, we're going there. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You ate some bad stew.
Yeah, this is really weird. Okay. So I was 31 years old. I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time when I was working at Nike. I was traveling overseas all the time, Africa, Asia. But when I was actually back home in Portland, Oregon, and 31 and otherwise healthy and like taking spinning classes and stuff, I suddenly fell ill. And it felt like bronchitis. And then I suddenly got really bad where I couldn't breathe. And it turned out I had the freaking flu. Like, who knew that the flu could almost kill an otherwise young and healthy person? But you know, I was intubated in the ICU, critical condition, turned into pneumonia and all these other secondary effects and infections. And a doctor said, well, you might not make it. Actually, I was kind of like drugged out at that time, but I think they told my family that I wouldn't. And that was like a real kind of turning point for me. You know, it took, once I started recovering, it was a long recovery, but it really helped me to kind of prioritize, you know, what's important. And I know that sounds very cliche for anyone who's been through an experience like that, but to say, you know, hey, I have boundaries here. I'm not going to kill myself for a job, as much as I do believe in this work that I'm doing, first of all. And then secondly, to just prioritize my own, you know, mental and physical and spiritual health. I think there's nothing more important than that. And it's a constant reminder. And sometimes I forget it. And in fact, I actually have this, I threw myself an I am alive party once I was well again. And a kind awesome. Friend laser printed this sign that says Mara is alive. And I have it like displayed very prominently in my house. And it's just a reminder that like, hey, you know, we don't actually have a lot of time on this planet, first of all. So do all the things that you can do, but also at the same time, don't kill yourself doing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's statements like that, or, you know, when I think about anybody who's great at anything, right? It's usually sometimes they come from a negative or traumatic experience. Now, mm-hmm. I won't say that your experience is negative, but like a traumatic experience of some sort. You know, it's no secret that Oprah, you know, had an abusive father and like suffered all these things. And then kind of recoiled in the, you know, 1,000% opposite direction. I'm always curious as to who are the people that just have it without the trauma, you know? Jerry Seinfeld talked about this at one point. He was like, I had a normal, we were upper middle class and low, and he's super successful. But I found like a lot of it comes like as a, in some ways, a response to trauma. There you go. That has been the end of. No, I'm just kidding. that's my Jerry Seinfeld pontification, but yeah, I think it's really just interesting to have that self introspection, mm-hmm. you know, along the way. Last but not least, you've been around the world and done a lot of cool things. What is your current innovation crush? What have you seen out in the world? You're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. It might be something like AI. It could be a meal you ate. I don't know.
Oh my God. What is my innovation crush?
Exactly. See?
What? And I was not prepared for this. Couldn't you have like
This is a test of your skill. Some ambiguity.
You know what it is? It's like, you know, seeing somebody you would never expect innovation from to be innovative. Like, for example, I was doing some work in Cuba. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of just basic resources that they don't have access to. And so I think somebody like was in a rush getting their coffee at the hotel and they needed a to-go cup. And the guy the hotel worker, like basically just like rigged together like a to-go cup by putting two cups together and then a rubber band around it and then some kind of like napkin around it. And that was like the to-go cup. And there's actually a word for it in Cuba in Spanish called, oh, I'm not going to say it correctly, but resolver, which is like, kind of like, you know, resolve to innovate under these massive constraints. And I've seen it, you know, all over, whether it's a slum community or anywhere else, you see like innovation can really come from anywhere. And so like, I think that's my crush is like when I see people doing stuff like that.
That's a great answer. Like I don't think about it as often or as eloquently as you do, because it's, but I do look at this idea of like, hey, you're an innovator if you find a new way of doing something. Mm-hmm. And most times I think we associate the word with some
like blockchain. Like no, actually.
It's like SpaceX landed a rocket. Like, it's innovation. Like, yeah, it is, but the
yeah, but like the hotel worker, I think it's just as creative and innovative.
Well, and I think another part of your career that we didn't get to touch on a lot is just the idea of bringing that out of people, you know, facilitating, helping with brainstorms, and turning an individual who didn't think they had that skill and help it. And that's a skill. Once you unlock it, it doesn't go away. Right. Kind of walk us through a little bit of in a facilitation environment, how to bring out some of the best creativity.
Yeah. In a facilitated environment. I mean, what's so amazing is that I've like facilitated design thinking sessions with people who would absolutely say, I am not a creative person. I do not belong here. I'm a little intimidated by all these sticky notes and all this. But one person even said like, well, your glasses were really cool. So like, therefore I'm like, I was a little intimidated. I'm like, well, sorry, I won't wear those glasses again. But you know, working with people, you know, like in like really rural communities, like there's, you know, one person attended an event from, she came up from West Virginia, and there's like other people who like work for the county or the Secretary of State of some state, and kind of like all these, you know, organizations, like very grassroots organizations who don't come across that type of thing. And I think it's kind of lowering the barrier to entry and not scaring them with like all these buzzwords and scary things, but like literally walking them through a process saying like, hey, write down 5 ideas on 5 sticky notes. And that's all you have to do. Like anybody can come up with ideas. And I think it's the facilitator's job to actually translate that and transform it into like, okay, let's put all those sticky notes on a wall and start to look at the patterns. And now let's like blend those things together to create something new. And I think like it's actually great that you just asked about that innovation crush, because I don't think that it needs to be the most technological thing. It doesn't need to be, you know, the most sexy idea. But I think really innovation is about kind of combining ideas to create something new. And even if it's a completely analog solution, that's like where the real wisdom starts to come out of people. And they suddenly look back and say like, oh my God, that was so much fun. And oh my God, I actually am a creative person.
Yeah. And I think that strikes me as also just like leveling the playing field, right? Whether you're a state expert and you built 85 robots, or you're that person who lives in a rural area and maybe
and we'll put those people next to each other and we'll start by, you know, putting them through an exercise like draw a picture of a toaster, and then like the rocket scientist like doesn't know how to draw, but like the random person like, you know, in the community will. And you're sort of like leveling the playing field by saying like, look, you don't have to be like the best artist in the world, you don't have to be the best whatever, but you're all bringing something different to the table. And it's that combination of different skill sets and mindsets that really kind of create that kind of magic and some real solutions.
Agile faces.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
No.
Yes, you do.
No.
And at Gov City, when we had to go around.
Oh, I didn't know what it was called.
It's called Agile Faces.
Yeah, your face was like, woo, yikes.
For you guys listening, it's a exercise where you actually draw a feature of somebody in a pair. Like I'll draw your eyes and your eyebrows, and then you hand me my paper back. I hand you yours back, and then we switch partners. And so next thing you know, you've got this like really bad construction of your face that's been done by like 20 people.
You were definitely like Clown Face McGee.
I was doing good until somebody like totally just did like a line. Like, and I was like, what is that? Everybody else was being very Bob Ross-like. And I'm going to put some eyebrows here, some creases there.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is
unconventional solutions to age-old problems.
Ooh. You said this before.
That was
you freestyled it?
No, I did.
All right. You can be in my band now.
All right.
Now that I know you can freestyle. So what can people do? How can we help? Where do we go?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I would love for people to think about how they can get out the count in their own communities. And you can contact me through my website and just fill out the little form and I'll get back to you. But if you have an idea of a company we should be talking to, an organization, if you want to just do a bunch of stuff on your own, we're always looking for creatives, whatever that means to you, to help out. And so, yeah, I would definitely reach out and I'd be happy to talk to you.
Well, I'll give you another free idea. This one's brilliant.
Oh, boy.
Every time you said the count, I was thinking of the count.
Ah, yes. Actually, there's
the... Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I was going to create a character.
It's happened before. I would love for Chris Denson to be the count. That would be new. The Australian census does it in one night, actually. And we have a period of several months in the U.S., but their population is small enough where they can do it in one night. And they did like all this. There was like a YouTube commercial I always play for people to show the kind of work that we do, where it's like the count being like, I'm going to count you over this
Damn
one
it.
Night.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not as original as that thought.
Hey. I don't want to dismiss your idea. I still think that you should be the count. There could only be one Chris Denson, the count.
And one black vampire outside of Blade. Because he's a half-breed. Yeah. Shout out to Obama. Mm. So, everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation. Chris, any last words? Anything you want to say, who you want to leave us with?
Oh, well, I do think that everyone in the world is creative. And I hope that you can tap into your own creativity. And thank you so much, Chris Denson. It's always a joy to see you.
Same here, Mara. Thank you so much. Everyone, we will talk to you next time.